with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's talk legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys of law, here on the talk station and inviting your questions as well. So I hope that you will give us a call about your legal life. We're talking to, been talking about starting a business, and Cecil Harvell is in with us, so Wes is on vacation.
Good morning, Ben.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. I hope you are.
Nice to see that sunshine once again.
It really is. Yeah. I tell you, it's wonderful.
Okay.
Ben, last week we did speak about, you know, just what do you do to upstart your own business, a small little business, or maybe a business with another person, or with a couple of folks. You know, what are some of the considerations? And so last week, Wes and I spent some time on that, and I'd like to continue that this week. Of course, we welcome any questions. We're trying to keep it, you know, very fundamental, because sometimes those are the things that just kind of get overlooked.
Yeah, and you know, again, some of those fundamental things about what kind of business you're going to have, and so how does it need to be structured, and then how do you act?
Well, one thing that you're going to have to do, is, which is so very basic, is get a business license.
Right.
Very simple thing to do, but needs to be done, and you... You process that through, and you put, of course, the license in the name of your business. Now, that brings up the question in terms of lots of questions. I mean, first of all, you know, there are certain businesses, Ben, that require licensure in order to do that business. You know, you can't just become a realtor without being certified as a realtor.
Right.
Or a physical therapist or
hairdresser.
Absolutely. Cosmetology, I think it's called. I mean, you know, the bottom line is that many, many businesses require some sort of licensure. Contractors, building contractors, and the level of their licensure, residential, commercial, unlimited. Many times what we find out is that if you're going to incorporate your business, then you're going to first have to have the administrative agency that licenses your form of business basically certify to the Secretary of State that you are in good standing with the licensing board.
Okay, because not only would you have that licensure for your particular skill, but you may also have need a community license, right? A business license, depending on what community you're operating in.
Correct. Yeah. That's right. But you've got to kind of get all of those ducks in a row in terms of, you know, the having your licensing board certify that you're in good standing with the licensing board, then, of course, apply for the business license, then, of course, apply for if you're going to incorporate, then of course, that's the Secretary of State is going to require that.
Right. As you mentioned last week, you and Wes were talking about, you know, you may not incorporate initially depending on the level of business that you're doing.
Well, that's right. And I highly advise clients to look carefully at whether or not their company is really ready, their little business is ready for incorporation. Because if you can't, as we've said so many times on the program, Ben, if you can't really stand up and walk and talk like a corporation, which means doing a corporate tax return, having a corporate bank account, a corporate federal ID number, maintaining your registry in good standing with the Secretary of State, which is a couple of $100 a year, and maintaining your minutes with your lawyer, your corporate lawyer, which again is another couple of $100 a year. Now that's not a lot of money.
Right.
But
right.
To
if you're
some
very
business,
small
if
getting
you're
started.
Very smart and you're getting started, I mean, you know, $500, $700, you know, is a lot of money. And we understand that. So, I mean, wait until you are, until you have some sense of viability to incorporate. And then, of course, yes, obviously that is going to be one of the very first things that you want to do as soon as your business really takes hold. And the reason you're wanting to do that is to protect your individual assets from liability, protect your family assets, your home, you know, assets that are there for the benefit of your family, your children, things of that nature. You don't want those to get, you know, wrapped up and commingled into some sort of litigation, and you would like to keep your business entity separate and distinct from mm-hmm. your personal entity.
You know, we mentioned that the community colleges in our area offer some great business advice. So there's a good ways to learn about some of those things so you can get started, including how to write a business plan and those sorts of areas.
They really do. And, you know, part of that, sometimes that business curriculum is that the student interview a lawyer. And I many times have gotten calls from those students saying, you know, gosh, Mr. Harvell, can I come by and just, you know, get my my check mark, if you will,
right,
and have
right.
an interview with you about mm-hmm. about starting up a business and some of the things to consider. So it really is a terrific program. No question about
it. Yeah, and you know, again, those businesses, when people start up, they have to think about these legal questions that you're asking here too, including, you know, one of those is whether or not you need to be bonded for a particular business. There are lots of different.
There are certain businesses that require a bond, absolutely. Other businesses that require, you know, some sort of professional liability. Mm-hmm. Insurance, okay? You have to have certification that you have professional liability insurance for your business before, of course, you know, certain other kinds of things can occur. Ben, another thing that comes to mind that we talked about is, you know, when you enter into a lease agreement
mm-hmm.
or you borrow money from the bank, or even from an individual, if you're being funded by a family member, let's say, or a friend, if you're so lucky to have a friend that can mm-hmm. fund your upstart business, you know, again, the note, and the lease mm-hmm. agreement and the contracts that you enter into, they need to be in the name of the business. And, of course, if you're incorporated or if you're an LLC, then they need to be in the name of the LLC and or if you're incorporated, the name of the corporation. Now, this does not mean that if you enter into a lease agreement that the landlord is not going to require that you, as a shareholder, they're going to require that you personally guarantee the lease.
Mm-hmm.
They might want your signature on the lease as a personal guarantor. And certainly a bank is going to require any upstart corporation for the shareholders to personally guarantee the loan to the bank. But again, we had a caller last week, I believe, from Emerald Isle,
right.
who was asking this question.
Right.
Again, let's keep the ducks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the note is the obligation primarily mm-hmm. is in the name of the business.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It should be structured in that way.
Yeah. Again, important to keep those in the right boxes.
Absolutely.
Keep everything in the right boxes.
And to have a fundamental understanding of kind of what I'm talking about mm-hmm. here in terms of, you know, understanding that yes, the note, the obligation would be in the name of the business, but absolutely, you know, many times on an upstart or even a business that's been around for a while, you know, the bank is certainly going to require or a lender is going to require that there be an individual guarantee, mm-hmm. a backup.
Right. And again, we're talking about people in business startups, some of the legal things they need to make sure they handle. And one of the things you talked about last week was avoiding commingling of funds, because that's one of the things that can get you in trouble.
Well, that's true. That's, again, you know, kind of part of the stand up, walk and talk like a corporation,
mm-hmm.
And keeping your books in order, your financial records in order, so that if for any reason there is a lawsuit or an audit by the Internal Revenue Service, anything of that nature, you know, your bookkeeping, your accounting very clearly indicates that that funds have been used for corporate purposes. Again, if you're going, you know, people are thinking right now, I know listeners are thinking, well, gosh, I've got to put personal money into my upstart
right.
business.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to start this business. I'm going to put $10,000 of my own money into it. I've been saving this money for a long, long time to start this business. You know, my grandmom or my granddad has helped me start this business up, $50,000, $25,000, whatever the number happens to be. Well, that's just fine. But the business entity,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
Gives back to the lender, even if it's yourself, I might add.
Right.
Okay. A note, a promise to repay that debt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That initial capitalization, if you will, to the company. So yes, let's just say that you take $10,000 and you loan it to your business to start the business. The business then needs to execute a note back to you individually saying that at when the business is really doing well and is moving and grooving, then the bottom line is that the business should have the money at that point to begin to start to repay that loan. And eventually that capital account, will that loan, if you will, to the business will get paid.
And a lot of times people will start a business and they put so much sweat equity into the business, but they don't pay themselves. And sometimes you need
they
to do,
do
that.
They do. And sweat equity is hard to define, but it's out there. But the bottom line is that absolutely you've got to keep this accounting in check.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's, you know, where a good accountant or CPA can help you with those kinds of things.
Our number here is 800-818-2255, 247-7282 in Carter, Craven, or Pamlico County, and also 353-4674. If you have a question for Cecil about startups of businesses and some of the ways you need to keep your legal life in order for that, or any other question on civil law, you can give us a call right now or send me an email, ben@thetalkstation.com, and we'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back. This is Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240 with Cecil Harvell from Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law on the web at harvellandcollins.com and talking about business startups. And Cecil, we have a caller here, Marilyn in Jacksonville, joining us this morning. Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing okay.
I just want to thank them for all the great legal advice I've gotten from listening to this program. I called about a year ago about my mother who had no will and stuff. And you were such a big help to me, you have no idea.
Ah, thank you, Marilyn. I appreciate that a lot.
But I have another question.
Absolutely.
My mother owns her home outright, and hers is the sole name on the deed. And what I want to know is what happens to that when she passes away?
Well, it would go, of course, first of all, a good lawyer is going to think about the fact that it would go according to her will.
She has none.
She has no will.
No.
Well, then it will not go according to a will because she doesn't have one, and it will go according to what is known as intestate succession or by statute in the state of North Carolina. And then one has to ask, what is her family like? I take it her husband, your father, and possibly is no longer living.
No, he's not.
Right. And how many children are there?
Three.
Okay, and there are no, she has no, of course her mother and father are not living.
No.
Right. Okay. Well, then it's going to go, equally to her children.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of the children, did she have any children who are no longer living?
No.
Okay, and the reason I asked that question because you mentioned, so your mom had three children.
Yes.
And they're all three still living.
Yes.
Well, that's wonderful. But let's say that if, you know, God forbid, one of those children, one of the three, were not still living, but had children, which of course would be your mother's grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
They would, of course, without a will, okay, which is what we're talking about here, they would, of course, step up to the plate and take their parents' share.
Right.
So it will go to the children. The other lots of issues,
yeah,
you know, are circulating out there, Marilyn, in my mind. I mean, you know, it's nice to have a will if your mother's able to still sign one and is competent to do so because it will name an executor and there'll be no question about who will be, you know, in control of her estate, who will see that her final bills, her tax return, things of this nature are wrapped up properly, which can affect, you know, the title to this property. without a will and naming no executor, then it's kind of up for grabs who will be in charge of her estate. Mm-hmm. There will have to be an administrator, which is the term that is then used when there is no executor per a will, pursuant to a will. The terminology changes ever so slightly to the term administrator. And there will be an administrator appointed by the clerk of court of the county where your mom is a resident. Who will then be appointed, who will have the duties of the executor to wind up and wind down the affairs of your mother. Mm-hmm. But that in and of itself can sometimes cause conflict in a family and can begin to affect, you know, the assets of the estate, which of course this real property is one of those assets. The other thing, of course, that comes to mind, so many things come to mind, Marilyn, is that what if your mom were in need of a long-term care facility? What if she were to go into a nursing facility for any reason? Even if just for 6 months, 9 months, a year, the very last part of her good life. The bottom line there is that if your mom went into were to have Medicaid, okay, which is very common this day and time in light of the cost of a nursing home, $5,000-$6,000 a month. The bottom line there is that the state of North Carolina could potentially have a lien against that home if we leave it titled in her name. Do you think there's any possibility that your mom would need that long-term care and would not necessarily be able to afford it independently?
No.
You don't think she would need that?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good thing.
Okay.
Any other questions or thoughts that are running through your mind, Marilyn?
What would happen at the... With the three of us wanting to sell a house, would that be up to the clerk of the administrator appointed by the clerk of court?
Yeah.
Institute that?
That's a good question. Real estate passes, we lawyers say, in stanter, meaning really at point of death. That's the law in the state of North Carolina, that the three heirs are going to take the property at the moment of your parents, at the moment of your mother's death. Now, that property is subject to the administration of her estate. If for some reason there were a lien, an encumbrance, if bills were, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of bills were there, or even $25,000 worth of bills, any bills really, she has an asset titled in her name, which will be in her estate, and therefore, you know, her bills, her valid bills are going to have to be paid. Her creditors are going to have to be provided for and dealt with. So that's why there's that, yes, it passes at the moment of death, but subject to administration. What if she had not paid her taxes to the Internal Revenue Service? What if there were this Medicaid lien that I just mentioned? What if there's a last, you know, a hospital bill? Again, that's unlikely with the elderly because many elderly folks, all elderly folks are almost always on Medicare or either Medicaid. And Medicare pays the majority of their bills. But again, the property would be subject to administration. Assuming that administration goes smoothly, which it sounds like in your mother's file it will, then the property passed to the three of you at the time of her death in what's called tenants in common interest, a third, a third, and a third. And that really at that point is really outside the scope of the estate. You all own the property, a third, a third, and a third. And the three of you then are going to have to make a decision about selling the property.
Or collectively taking care of any debts, right?
Correct.
They could do that.
Well, I already took care of that in terms of the fact that that seems to not be a problem in her file. The debts will have to be taken care of.
Right.
And then assuming that that's all taken care of, the property is there, a third, and a third. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they then are going to have to make the decisions that many families, all families have to make when someone dies. What do we now do with the property?
Right.
Do one of the children want to buy the other two out? Mm-hmm. Do we just want to sell the property and split it a third, and a third? What are we going to do with this property?
Okay. Again, Marilyn, you gave me a lot of things to think about there.
Yes, they do. And again, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. And again, we'll come back to a little bit more about starting up a business, too, here on a Coastal Daybreak. And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law online at harvellandcollins.com. And you can also reach them for an appointment at 252-726-9050. That's 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. And we'll have more to come in just a bit. Welcome back. Wes is on vacation. Cecil Harvell with us here with Let's Talk Legal from Harvell and Collins. And back just a little bit to the subject, or you want to go back to that caller?
Well, Marilyn's question was just such a good question. And, of course, you know, it just evolves from there. I hope I made it clear that really real property, land and our houses, you know, they pass by operation of law at the time that we die, subject to administration of the estate. The subject to the administration of the estate part being, you know, most of the time gets handled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
Let's face it. I mean, right. Most people, their bills are able to get paid. They've provided for resources for their funeral.
Mm-hmm.
They're up to speed on their tax returns and their payment of their taxes with the Internal Revenue Service. So most estates don't have problems is what I'm saying there. So as a result of that, the property is there vested in the children. That then, of course, brings up things that we've discussed here in the program in terms of, they're now tenants in common. What if they can't agree on a price to sell the property? What if one wants to buy the other out? I mean, there are issues out there that can lurk in a situation such as this if the family isn't a close family.
And also back to kind of to our original subject, if it were a property that could actually, you know, have income possibilities, I mean, they could form a family LLC, right?
And absolutely. And even if it's not income producing, if it were, we have a lot of that happen with regard to a resort property, a beach property, vacation home. The children will together now take over the control of the property, the taxes, the insurance, and place it in an LLC and come up with a sharing arrangement amongst the family. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's commercial property, rental property, hey, good. Yeah. Absolutely. Same thing.
Yeah, again, so kind of back to tie that back into what we were also talking about. Mm-hmm. You may start up a family business out of that.
That's right. That's exactly a family limited liability company.
Yeah.
And that's just simply an LLC that's owned by various members of the family. It doesn't have to be equal.
Mm-hmm.
They can have minority interest and majority interest depending on what the circumstances are. For instance, again, if one of the three children were not living and had two children, two grandchildren, then see those two grandchildren singularly would in fact have a minority interest.
Right, exactly.
In an LLC.
Mm-hmm.
Because their aunt and uncle would have a third, and they only, of course, have a half of a third.
Right, right. So a sixth. But again, those are some of those things that make every case its own unique entity, and that's why you need to get the advice of folks like Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time on the web at harvellandcollins.com. You can call them at 252-726-9050. They're at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. Again, call 252-726-9050.